Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, February 2nd, and we're back with you. Right, Kelsey?
Yes, we are.
Pretty much at the speed of light, folks. I've regained a lot of energy over the fest.
He was so sick. We took a couple days off. I know you missed us.
Yes. You definitely missed us. I missed coming here, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I was out Thursday, Friday, and Monday because I had a terrible cold. I was coughing like crazy. And how do you do a radio show when you're coughing, right?
Right.
It's not like being a car mechanic or something where it's okay.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, I mean, I was coughing like a dog, and I thought, you know, I better stay home. And we had to cancel a couple guests and stuff and reschedule and all that. So that was a pain. But other than that, you know, I realized also that it's so good that I have a reason to come here in the morning, because otherwise I just stay in my pajamas all day, you know. I can work at home, you know.
I know.
But then I get really depressed when I do.
Right.
So I got to get out of the house, you know.
Likewise. And it's good that you took off, though, because, you know, I've actually had a couple friends, healthy young friends, get pneumonia.
Really?
Yes. Wow. I don't know. I guess the conditions are just right. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And you know, there have been so many sick people coming to the station here.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to all of them, and I probably caught it from somebody, you
know.
Sure. Because I rarely get sick, really.
Right.
You know, and even now it lasted a couple of days, but right before the weekend it was really bad, you know. I had fever and all that stuff, so but thank goodness I'm okay now. We're back, and we have a fascinating guest in the studio. We'll get to him in just a moment.
Yes, we do.
How have you been, Kelsey?
I've been good.
Yeah, busy?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, very
busy. Yeah,
busy
with all kinds of things, right?
Oh, so much going on. Yes, so much going on. Let's see, what news do I have?
Yeah, do you have any news, really?
Well, you knew about the legging line that I started. So.
No, did you? Oh, yeah, you did tell us about it, right?
Yeah. So I'm...
So much for my memory, man. Go on.
So I'm...
So a leggings line, and that's yours?
It is, yes.
Really? What's it called?
And so it's called KB for Gymra. I've teamed up with my other company, Gymra, to kind of produce this legging line. So I'm going to a fabric show in a couple of weeks and hopefully deciding on a fabric and then approaching manufacturers and things like
nice.
That.
Nice. So, and you do the designs for them?
Yes.
And how do you do the design? Do you sit on a computer or something? And
that's right.
Really?
Yes.
That's very cool.
It's different.
So you taught yourself how to do it?
I did.
Wow.
Yes, it was a result of boredom.
Wow.
When I was sick, actually, I was like, oh my God, what do I do with myself? I was all out of wine. So I was like, well, I can't drink because I'm too lazy to leave the house. So I was like, what else should I do?
That's funny.
I know.
Yeah. So, well, that's good. You know, you keep yourself busy and everything.
Yeah.
And that's cool. Well, I can't wait to see them, you know.
I actually have them on now. I'll show you.
Oh, you
bit.
Do?
Yeah.
Let me see. Lift your leg so I can see it. Oh, wow.
That
is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you come up with designs and everything.
Yes, yes, wow. Yes. These are one of the samples I just got in a few days ago. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I told the listeners, you're so multi-talented. I feel small next to you.
Oh, stop.
Yeah, I don't do enough.
No, and then, you know, I go through the whole process. Like you hire models and bring in outside designers and all kinds of stuff. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Keeps you busy. That's good. You see, I was looking to get into trouble when I was home. So I need to, so it's always good to keep busy, I think.
It is. Yeah.
Otherwise,
I found that idle hands are the
online.
Devil's handiwork.
Yeah.
I found growing up in a small town, I was like,
Yeah.
You know, you get into trouble. You know how
get into trouble. I start buying things online that I don't need or can't
use. That's a massive problem for me, too.
It is a problem, right?
It's so funny. It's like 10 boxes will show up at the house.
Yeah, right?
I know. And my boyfriend's like, what are these? And I'm like, nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it doesn't concern you.
I know. I'm like, just go.
Move along.
Go to work. God, leave me alone. Like, why are you all up in my business?
That's funny.
Yeah.
Good. Before we get to our guest, we should just talk about the Iowa caucuses last night.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you believe that Cruz actually won?
I can't believe it.
And he beat Trump.
I know. And,
but, you know, it's like it doesn't matter who wins. You're always going to have naysayers and haters, you know?
Uh-huh.
So it's like, I mean, I can't believe the stuff people come up with to badmouth the candidates, you know?
I know.
And, you know, I'm not going to take sides this time because we have a guest. I want to respect him, whatever his political views are. So we're not going to talk politics that much. But Clinton and Sanders constantly are nose-to-nose, 50-50.
I know.
And
I couldn't believe it. And I really couldn't believe Ted Cruz won. Actually, I kind of could because it's such an evangelical state.
You're right.
You know?
Right.
So it makes sense, actually.
I know. Actually. I know. I mean, look, he's got a good platform, but I wish he'd do less with that Bible thumping thing, you know? I mean, I'm all for religion and everything, but you alienate people when you bring it into politics. And because what happens is you might attract one group, but then you alienate other groups as well. So, you know, you don't know what to do, but so the best thing is just to be yourself, and we'll see what's going to happen, you know. It's still wide open. What I'm happy about is that Rubio came in third and only a point under Trump, you know.
So I know.
I still think, you know, he's got the least amount of controversial stuff to deal with.
Right.
But what do I know, right? So we'll see what happens.
I mean, it was so funny. I was watching the, you know, the news, the results with a couple of my girlfriends last night, and they're not into politics at all. And they're like looking at everyone's outfits. And they're like, Cruz. I know. Yeah, they are, and they're like, you know, Cruz needs to put some of that campaign money towards a nose job because he looks like, you guys are so mean.
Oh, wow.
And, you know.
I know. So I know, and there's a video of him kissing his daughter, and she kind of doesn't want him to, and people are calling him a creep and all that stuff.
Oh, come on, that's mean.
I know.
Come
what the
on.
Hell is this? You know, they're like in public. So
that's so mean.
Yeah, I mean, people will do anything to bring down a person, you know.
Yeah.
But for those of you who are who believe in the or really accept the Groundhog Day thing, today is Groundhog Day.
Oh my gosh, is it?
You know what
wow.
it is? Did you ever see the movie?
I didn't see the movie.
You gotta see the movie. It's the funniest thing because. Well, the movie is not really related to Groundhog Day, although it's totally part of the movie. But the movie is about living your life over every day, every day. It's with Bill Murray. It's a comedy. Mm-hmm. And every day he wakes up and the same day happens. So he has to deal with it differently.
Interesting.
So that's Groundhog Day is at the heart of that movie. But essentially what it is they're letting in Pennsylvania, I guess – maybe they do it in other places, but the one in Pennsylvania, they look at the groundhog coming out of his hole, and if he's and if he sees his shadow, then it's going to be, let's see, if he does not see his shadow, there'll be early spring.
Okay.
And if he does see his shadow, it's a late spring.
Okay.
Okay. My question is, how do they know he sees his shadow?
Yeah,
what does he do exactly? Does he run away from it? You know, does he tell them, hey, I'm seeing my shadow? What is this?
I know.
So it's funny, you know,
yeah,
but
that
people
is
believe
funny.
In that, you know.
They do.
Maybe it happens that way. I don't know.
Hey.
But it's funny that way. It always reminds me of that movie.
Yeah, no comment. I don't know. That's stupid.
All right. Well, we're going to bring in our guest now who is enjoying himself good. If you guys are hearing laughter in the background, so it's a good thing you're enjoying yourself. We have Dr. Randall Bell. Should we call you Randy or Randall or Dr. Bell? How do you like?
Just go with Randy. That's fine.
Randy. Awesome. That's the way I like it. First name basis, you know. So, but you go by Dr. Randall Bell, and so people can find you. And you wrote a book in addition to other things that you do, and we'll talk about everything. But your book is called Rich Habits, Rich Life. Tell us what the book's about.
Well, it's basically about a journey I've taken. I've studied disasters for about 25 years as an economist, and I've worked on big disasters, the World Trade Center and the Hurricane Katrina and Bikini Atoll nuclear test sites, and I worked on O.J. Simpson and JonBenet Ramsey tragedies like that. And it's kind of evolved into, I'm not so much fascinated with disasters, I'm fascinated with the recovery process. You know, what are the strategies to bring growth, and what do we do for resilience? And that morphed into a volunteer effort that I did at a homeless shelter in Laguna Beach, where I'm from, Laguna Beach, California. And the principles are really powerful that I use with these major disasters, the assessment principles and so forth. And it really comes down, what it really boils down to is our daily habits. We can't control the weather. We can't control the global economy, but we can control what time we get up, what we put in our mouths, you know, what we write down, what we say, what we read. Those are daily habits, and those really statistically correlate with success. Mm. And that principle works with the homeless, and it works with millionaires and billionaires and everyone else.
Wow. So it's pretty much like universal rules or laws, whatever, that you've noticed that people follow.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
Their behavior.
It's, exactly. You know, I don't walk into the boardroom to discuss the World Trade Center with a lot of this pop psychology and a lot of the, you know, kind of success guru cotton candy that's out there. I have to have real strategies because these are very serious situations. So, you know, I'm very keen to what's effective and what's just some notion or fad of the day. Mm. And I go with those strategies that are proven to correlate with success.
Wow. How did it come about for you? I mean, how did you get involved in that?
Well, I 30 years ago, I was doing conventional real estate appraisals, and I got interested in doing something new, and I got into law school, and then I just had this whole epiphany to take my whole skill set, and instead of looking at what created value, I looked at how to measure loss and value, and then little did I know that would invite me into a whole arena of these mega disasters. I didn't really plan on it. It just kind of evolved. This was 20, 30 years ago. And since then, I just go from disaster to disaster, working on strategies to make the victims whole, to try and, you know, work things out. I'm working on Porter Ranch right now. I'm working on cases all over the world.
Yeah, that's
with
the gas leak, gas leak there in Porter Ranch.
Yeah.
So what do you mean you're working with that? What are you doing exactly?
Well, I measure the legal term is diminution value. The property owners can suffer a loss in property value. And,
sure.
And with a lot of these cases, it can add up to billions of dollars.
Wow.
And so I'm the guy that actually computes them. But oftentimes, I find myself at kitchen tables talking to people about what happens. My PhD is actually in sociology and what, you know, the socioeconomics of recovery. And so we get into these discussions of strategy, you know, aside from the dollars and cents, what kind of attitudes and what kind of things can we do to kind of put our lives back together again?
Yeah. I don't know, Kelsey, if you've heard of this, but Porter Ranch is not far from here.
I did hear of it.
Yeah,
yes.
And they discovered there's a huge gas leak, right, Randy?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big methane gas leak. I'm new to the case myself. I don't know the details. I just know that it's...
They're saying that some animals are getting sick, like the dogs and stuff, you know. And I don't know what people are feeling, but it's probably going to be like long-term effects, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I was just at an event on Sunday, and, you know, one of the attorneys asked everyone in the room to raise their hand if they had suffered any of these symptoms of nausea and so on and so forth, and virtually everyone raised their room.
Oh,
so
it's a
big problem.
It is, huh? Wow. Wow.
So sad. It reminds me of Aaron Brockovich, kind of.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like environmental disasters.
And it's funny you say that, Kelsey, because the attorney that was there is actually the attorney that prosecuted, actually the real attorney that prosecuted the Aaron Brockovich case.
Oh, really? My gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting, and we'll talk more about it. So for those of you just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Randall Bell. His book is Rich Habits, Rich Life. And that's... you know, I mean, that is like a promise, right? I mean, you're saying if you can improve your habits, you can improve your life.
Well, absolutely. One of the habits I studied was if you make your bed in the morning, you're 207% more likely to be a millionaire. Now, you can get into these theoretical debates of, you know, which came first, being a millionaire, making your bed, or why, and so forth. I have my own theory. I think it just puts you in a productive mindset. But heck, if these specific habits correlate with various measures of success, I'm going to do them, and I want my kids to do them. I mean, it just makes sense to correlate and reconcile the fact that, hey, successful people have a certain way of doing things, and this is what they are, and you're more likely, statistically, factually, scientifically, to have various measures of success. And it's not just money. I mean, a lot of people measure success in other ways, earning a degree or beating a disease or all kinds of things. So I let people define what success means to them.
Right, exactly. You know, I've been reading this book about like positive thinking and everything. And it's interesting because he says, the writer says he was talking to this guy. And the guy's like, I have nothing. You know, it's like, I'm unhappy. I don't have anything. I've lost everything I had. And the author starts asking him. He says, well, are you married? He says, yeah, I have a wonderful wife. She's never going to leave me, blah, blah, blah. Do you have kids? Yeah, I have three great kids. They're all grown and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, friends. Do you have friends? And do you have your health? And, you know, and I think he asked him also about religion. Do you believe in, yeah, God's with me, blah, blah, blah. The bottom line is, he told him, he says, so what exactly don't you have? You seem to be very successful, right? I mean, you don't measure success just with money. If you have a family you can be proud of, friends that support you, you know, these are accomplishments on their own, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, Sam, because as I said, I volunteered at this homeless shelter, and I asked, I did a survey, and I asked millionaires, how do you rank your happiness 1 to 10? And the answers came in from 7 to 9 was the average. I asked the homeless group, week after week, there are different people coming through, what's your level of happiness? And it ranged from 6 to 8.
And, hey, and the that's not that
I know.
Big of a
it's
difference.
Not, exactly, Kelsey. It's not a big difference. And the reason why is that if you have enough money to pay your basic bills, scientifically, I've measured this, you're as likely to be as happy just being able to pay your bills in terms of happiness as a billionaire. Because the things that after paying your basic bills that bring happiness have nothing to do with money.
That's true. I was actually reading in, I think it might have been the Wall Street Journal. I'm not sure exactly, but I was reading something about that exactly. There's a threshold, and I think they said
like
it
50
was
or 60
I think
a
they
year.
Said it was 80,000 actually.
80,000 a year?
But after that, money makes no difference because your basic needs are met and you have enough to live comfortably.
Right.
So, yeah, that's interesting.
That's true. So you're saying like all the luxuries and everything don't really make us happy.
Well, exactly. I mean, we all know, I know many multimillionaires, and some of them are miserably married, and they're miserable. I mean, and they've got tons of money. And I know some people that are brand new, just, you know, in college or whatever, and they're, you know, wildly in love, and they're extremely happy. So, you know, there's a lot more to happiness than just money. Now, now money's, I'm not saying it's not important. It's 8% of happiness is what it is. But, and if, you know, it's a great way to be miserable.
Yeah, right?
but beyond that, you know, you're going to find your happiness in other ways.
Wow, very interesting. You see, so that's something that I think people should keep in mind, you know, because I think many people think, once I have a lot of money, I'm going to be happier, you know.
Right.
But I think unless it's a life-changing thing, like winning the lottery big time, then another $50,000 a year, another $100,000 a year is not going to make a difference to your happiness.
No,
that's
not at
all. That's what you're saying, right?
No, not at all. In fact, I know a CPA, and he has a client who won the lottery. And
oh, my gosh.
You know, not terribly happy. And you know, it brought out a lot of ugliness in the family and people, you know, grabbing on
so
the money.
True. We were just talking about how there's the show on Investigation Discovery, my brain rot TV that I love so much, and it you know, it's called The Curse of the Lottery or something, and I love to watch it, but it's really sad because it's there are so many cases, enough cases to where they can actually make a show called The Curse of the Lottery about people who it's actually destroyed, and it brings out all of these bad things, and you know, they get scammed, and they end up losing friends and family and all, and blowing their money and going bankrupt and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's true. And but that's not to say that having money means you're going to be miserable either.
No, no, no,
I mean,
I know
lots of people that have a lot of money and they're very happy, but their happiness comes from outside of their money.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I have to agree because just I mean, I've never been rich or anything, but I know that, well, let's put it this way. I think if you have extra money, it will not necessarily make you happy. But like you said, if you go under that threshold, man, that can be tough.
Right.
Well, yeah,
right?
I mean,
you can't pay your bills.
Yeah, I mean, when I talk to the homeless, you know, and I say, you know, whoever said money doesn't make you happy didn't sleep under a bridge. I mean,
that's right. So true.
You know, right. So you got to have enough to pay your bills and be comfortable in that regard. After that, your happiness can come to from any number of things.
Right. So and I true. Think that's great. It's so encouraging, you know, to hear that. So now, so where do habits come from, Randy? I mean, the thing is this, is that we know that, you know, if you do something often enough, it'll become a habit, right?
Yeah.
But our basic habits, do they come like when we're young, when we're really young? Is that when they start?
Well, as a sociologist, I mean, I can tell you they come from all kinds of avenues. Some of them are learned. We see our parents doing something and they don't necessarily tell us. We just see them and we mimic that.
Right.
Sometimes we deliberately learn a habit, or we're told to do a habit, or that kind of thing. It comes from a number of things. In adult age, I mean, the principles that I you know, kind of teach are put into four categories: me, we, do, be. Me habits are anything I do to improve myself intellectually, philosophically, or spiritually. So it's anything I believe, think, or feel. So those would be habits like reading, meditating, prayer, taking nature walks, whatever you're into to improve your head.
Right.
Those are the me habits. The we habits are things to build relationships, being a little kinder, maybe saying hello to people, sending thank you notes. Those are all habits that build relationships. Do habits build productivity? So that's managing our health, taking, you know, habits of eating right, habits of, you know, eliminating clutter in our homes, managing our money, that kind of thing. And then B habits are habits that build the future, like setting written goals, managing a calendar and a to-do list. So I really kind of teach, you know, a well-rounded, balanced, complete set of me, we, do, be habits, and really kind of assess all of them and see where you are with them, and then pick the one that really resonates as being deficient, and then start off small, and it will naturally, you know, blow up into something bigger.
Yeah. Wow. So I mean, so your book really addresses every part of life, right? It's not just about, because you mentioned rich life, rich habits, and we already said that it's not just about money.
Right.
Right.
I did that on purpose because, you know, my son said, Dad, you know, come on, your book title has the word rich twice. You know, give me a break. And I get it. But what I'm trying, and money is, I say, it's 8%. It's one chapter out of 10. And you do the math, it's 8%. But it's a rich life comes from a lot of other things. So I acknowledge the money thing. I talk about the money thing. I talk about the strategies that are guaranteed to build wealth. There's no question about it.
Wow.
And they've worked for me. But I also talk about strategies to build intellect, and how to build friendships, and how to build a legacy, and how to build goal setting. You know, all these kinds of things, because they're important. They're all important, and they all work in balance.
Yeah.
And they have to all be there.
Right.
Wow. I'm starting this right away.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like a promising book. It's a hardcover. When was it published? Is it?
It just came out this month.
Really?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
To you.
Yeah.
Like bringing a new baby to the world, right?
You know, they say writing a book is like you know, when you complete the book, it's like the kickoff in a football game, and the rest of the game is all marketing. So
really,
now we really get into the game.
Yeah, but you do have the product, and it's a solid product.
No, I'm kind of there at my business too.
Yeah.
We have the whole product now. We just need marketing.
Exactly. So
yeah.
It's all marketing. But I've been really blessed because, you know, it's hard for an author to get one New York Times bestseller to endorse it.
Right.
I've had 7 or 8. I just got an email from another one from Robert G. Allen, who wrote Nothing Down. Mega. He sent me an email at 4 a.m. saying, you know, I didn't have anything to do. I had your book. I started going through it. And I go, whoa. And I got into it more and more. And bam, yeah. I got an endorsement from, you know, a mega author. So it's pretty exciting.
That's nice.
Maybe you'll be
that's
a New
nice.
York Times bestseller. That would be great.
I think we're on the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, he
be
will
awesome.
Be. He's on this show, you know. It's inevitable. We're talking to Dr. Randall Bell, PhD. The book is Rich Habits, Rich Life, The Four Cornerstones of All Great Pursuits. So the cornerstones, is that what you just mentioned?
Yeah.
The me and the we?
Yeah, the me, we, do, be.
Yeah.
I live in Laguna Beach, and I was sitting there on the beach just enjoying watching my son surf, and the surfer came up to me and says, Dr. Bill, me, we, do be. So anyone can remember this strategy.
Right.
I can teach it to a surfer who's half stoned. I can teach it to a CEO or anyone in between.
That's hilarious.
Wow.
Oh my God, that's
so now I would imagine you took some of your work that you've done over the years and everything and things you've learned and put it in the book.
Absolutely. I've been really privileged to have been and given access to fascinating places, these disasters all over the world. I feel like I'm filming a Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
And a lot of time the media is involved. But more importantly, these really interesting people. I mean, I actually sat at the kitchen table with Nicole Brown Simpson's family to discuss their strategies for going forward. And Denise Brown got this idea, and there's a lot of grief, no doubt about it, but she says, I'm going to channel it in a positive way. Mm-hmm. I'm going to educate women that are in these battered, you know, toxic relationships and help them get out of it. And I've been to many events with her. I was on her board of directors, and where women have come up and thanked Denise for saving their lives. So there's some really cool, positive stuff that I bring into the book, these kind of stories from this kind of access to these fascinating people. I've been very privileged. I'm kind of, and you know, towards retirement age, and I just think I have something more important to do than just, you know, lay around at the beach like I like to do.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And actually, one of the sisters, Tanya Brown, had a show here on the station.
Oh, really?
And
oh,
I know that she also helps battered women
and
things like that.
You know, I was obsessed with that case for the longest time.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, we all were.
I remember when I was little, my grandpa sitting
yeah,
at the
you
TV
had to be pretty
yelling
little, right?
profanities that cannot be repeated.
Yeah.
You like, must have been what, like 4 or 5 years
German
old?
German
right?
guy, yeah. He's like, oh, he did it. Oh my gosh, I can't believe he's going to get away with it.
Yeah, I just had lunch, or my wife and I just had dinner with Tanya. She's terrific. I love Tanya.
She's
and
nice,
she's done
right?
so many great things with her life. And she went to back to school and got a degree, and she's helped a lot of people herself.
I can't
too.
Even imagine. I would just the amount of anger you would have. I think that's a big. That would
right.
be a big issue.
It is, Kelsey, but I'll tell you something. I was having lunch with Denise once, and I had heard something about OJ that, frankly, kind of pissed me off. And I said something to Denise about it, and she said, you know, Randy, just keep it positive. And that's, I'll tell you, the Brown family are some of the coolest, funnest, nicest people you would ever hang around
wow.
with. And so for them to be like that and not be defeated is just really admirable, and they're creating quite a legacy. You know, when there's a disaster, you got three choices. You can take a dive, mm-hmm. and a lot of people do. You can survive, which I admire. That's cool. Or you can thrive, and they've mm-hmm. thrived. They've actually beat the challenge and come out better than
better.
They were,
yeah.
I think.
Wow.
That's amazing.
You see, these are things that are important to know, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, because I think in life, you know, I mean, everybody's got some habits they're not happy with, you know.
Yeah.
And I know I do, and it's hard to break them. Do you offer ways in the book to break bad habits?
Yeah, I sure do. I mean, I deal with that with the homeless because a lot of them have substance abuse and alcoholic, mm-hmm. you know, issues and kind of that kind of thing. And I tell them they can wallow in that misery with a clinical psychologist that comes in on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. But I'm a sociologist, and my strategy is different. I look at life like a glass. You got 24 hours in a day. You got a glass that's got 24 ounces, you know, and there's only so much capacity. And if it's full of a bunch of junk, you can ignore it. You can talk about it. You can stare at it. You can do all kind of, you kind of treat it, stick your finger in it and play with it. Or what I do is it's a full glass theory. You start taking these rich habits that are scientifically proven to correlate with success. It's not a mystery here. The mm-hmm. research has been done. And you start pouring in the new habits. And you just start pouring them in and pouring them in. You don't get clarity right away. You know, you actually create a mess because you're mixing old and new and so forth. But you just keep pouring them in, relentless. You just are relentless. You keep pouring them in. In time, the bad habits are displaced. Mm. So forget the bad habits.
Right.
And I tell my homeless friends, the same thing I tell my millionaire friends, you know, go get high. I tell them, go get absolutely buzzed. But get buzzed by taking walks. Get buzzed by, you know, picking up trash off the lawn that doesn't belong to you and help the community. Get buzzed by reading a book. Get buzzed by exercising. That's one of the best buzzes you can get.
Yeah.
You know, people that exercise crush it when it comes to income, when it comes to education, when it comes to happiness.
Really?
Exercise is huge.
Wow.
In all departments.
So true.
So I tell them, go get buzzed with good habits. Forget about the bad habits. They'll be naturally displaced because because you only have 24 hours in a day. And if you wake up on time and you make your bed and you go and you're kind to someone and then you go on a walk and you meditate or pray, whatever you're into, you read something inspirational, and then you you know, have a calendar and you meet your appointments, you're on time, and you go through your day that way, and you have a night ritual, whatever that is, to kind of, you know, button up the day, those bad habits are going to be naturally replaced, you know, right, with the good ones.
Right. And it makes sense, you know, because I think in order to give up a habit, you have to find another one maybe to fill that gap, right?
Right.
It's called cross addiction.
It? Yeah, it's something like that. There's different terms.
But well, yeah, if you get addicted to something else, yeah.
Right.
But the thing is I remember, I wish I'd remember it now and do it again, but I mean, I smoke cigarettes, and over during my life, there was a time when I really wanted to stop, and I realized the best way is to do something that's totally opposite. And I thought, if I go exercise, you can't be working on your health and smoking at the same time. It doesn't make sense.
Okay.
So I totally replaced that with working out, and it worked great.
Yeah.
You know, for many
good.
Years. For many years. So maybe I should consider that again.
Wow. How long did you go without smoking?
For a few years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, I got in shape, I got everything, and you know, and then it was all out the window. But the point is, it can be done, and I think you need to replace it, because when you give up a habit, it leaves a vacuum there. You know, it's like, what am I going to do with all this free time now? What am I going to do with my hands now?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so, yeah, you have to find replacements. Otherwise, it's just cold turkey.
Yeah. And big mistake, a very common mistake, is you stop a bad habit. You're sitting there going, well, I'm bored. You know,
yeah.
And boredom is a trigger that leads to, you're going to fulfill that need with something.
Right.
So it's like, I'm hungry. And let's say I have the bad habit of eating too many ding-dongs and Twinkies. And stuff. Okay, so I'm hungry. That's the trigger. And I'm going to eat something. So if I start eating a bowl of oatmeal instead of the donut, then I get a reward. The reward is I'm full.
Right.
Only I'm full of something healthier. And that habit's likely to ripple out from there naturally. You don't have to even make a commitment to that.
Right.
That's just kind of the psychology of these habits.
Right.
So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you went to school and you have a degree in sociology, right?
Right.
That's what you have your PhD in?
It is, yeah.
Right. And what attracted you to sociology?
Well, I'm a numbers guy. I also have an MBA. I went to UCLA. I'm a UCLA guy, and I have
have
an MBA. And I in dealing with all these disasters, there were all these emotions and issues and people issues that didn't really fit with the numbers and the data. And I couldn't help. You can't be human and not be intrigued. And meeting the people that I'm meeting, villagers in the Marshall Islands that had their homes, literally bombed with nuclear weapon tests, that kind of stuff, you know. And so I just started reading on human behavior. I was more interested in sociology and society and groups and how the interactions and psychology for some reason. I just kept going and reading and reading until I ended up with a degree in it.
Wow.
That's how it kind of worked out.
That's
very
great.
Cool. So
yeah.
Now, so you have a scientific mind. I mean, the book has a lot of scientific approaches, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the standard, the error margin is very low, and there's probably close to 50 different studies in the book that are summarized, but they all have a margin of error of less than 3%.
Right.
And so I can say with confidence that, you know, this study correlates with this or with that. And I think that's important, because there's so many self-help gurus out there.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, I listen to them. I like a lot of what I hear. But sometimes I hear things and I'm just going, where did that come from? What's your basis for that? I have a basis for everything I say, and I kind of feel more confident and comfortable with that.
Right. Sounds good. If you guys want to find out more about Randy, you can go to richhabits.com. Although that resolves to another to leadershipinstitute.com, right?
Well,
that's
kind of the mothership, but Rich Habits is all in there, yeah.
Right. So you can find out more about the book and everything and get the book. I see you also have Core IQ videos online now at no charge. What are those?
Well, basically, I was teaching at the volunteering at the homeless shelter, and some of these people move on and they graduate to even nicer facilities, and they're saying, we love your class, we come back, and I said, sure, and they said, well, why don't you videotape some of this stuff? Because the problem is this: everybody needs to learn goal setting, negotiation skills, time management. conflict resolution. Those are all skills we need.
Wow.
But they're not taught in our they're not taught in our schools or universities.
Right.
So core IQ are these core skills everybody needs. And with a group of very successful friends, we were working on a series of videos, and we call it Core IQ. It's skills, frankly, we want our kids to have, but now you know we want everyone to have it, and we're all successful. We don't need any more money, so we just put online for free.
Nice.
Wow, that's amazing. And you guys can find out more. You know, I mean, these are things that totally make sense. I've always heard about making lists and goals and time management, but I never really approached life that way. And I think it's time. You know?
I think so. It's really funny because my dad, he gets up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and he always has this list, and he gave me this like Rolodex. Does anybody even use those anymore? And, you know, gave me this whole planner, and I regretfully have yet to open it, but I keep it on my phone. It's kind of new age.
Those are great skills. I'll tell you, I used to work for PricewaterhouseCoopers. It's the biggest consulting firm in the world. And I was hiring these brilliant people, but they had horrible etiquette and other issues. And they needed these core IQ skills, these rich habits. Mm-hmm. And I had to literally pay thousands of dollars for these expensive training and development programs to teach them this stuff. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs good etiquette. Everybody needs goal setting. Everybody needs time management. Everybody needs these skills. It's right. It's nuts to me that they're not taught in our schools.
It is crazy.
And I'm on this mission to say, hey, I've had this incredible career. It's been a great career in every respect. And I want to take these lessons I've learned. And I want to create, you know, something to give these core skills to my kids, your kids, everyone.
Right. It's funny. The older I get, the more I realize that he's right. Like, maybe I should start doing it.
I know. Well,
your dad sounds like a smart guy.
Yeah, he's a business owner. Yeah,
there you go. But no, I think goal setting is very important. And I've never done this, but I think writing things down is very important, right?
Oh, it absolutely is. Just the process. You know, a lot of times I'll be listening to a lecture and I'm thinking, this is fascinating. And I look around, I'm the only one taking notes. Mm-hmm. The process of that message going in through your ear, in your brain, down your arm, onto a pen, onto paper, and doubles my retention. I'll remember more than the next person next to me because I'm writing it down, even right. if I never look at it again. Oh, if I look at it again, my retention goes up. And if I actually tell someone else about it, my retention is going to go up to about 75-80%.
Wow.
So writing things down is, again, scientifically proven to correlate with success.
Very interesting. Yeah. Because, you see, I feel like the writing down of notes kind of distracts me. I'd rather just be totally connected to what is being said. But you're here to say that when you actually write it down, it's more powerful.
I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate that you're there when you're listening.
Right.
But actually writing it down will even connect you at another level. And right. It may not come naturally at first, but over time you'll say, wow, that's right.
So you need to learn note-taking
yeah,
too,
but,
in a way.
You know, don't get overwhelmed with, you know, 37 new habits. Because right. then you get what I call the January 4th effect. That's the day that all news resolutions go down.
That's funny.
Go down the toilet. It's like, also, you know. It's also my birthday, so don't do the January 4th effect. Just take one new habit. Just pick one that's like I had this guy Danny in my homeless class. He had, you know, all these habits, and then I said, just one, Danny, come on. And he said, okay, I'm going to do 50 push-ups a day. I said, Danny, your commitment's one push-up a day, but you're really going to do one push-up. I don't care how tired you are, you're going to do one push-up a day. You can do 900 more if you want, but your commitment's to do one. And he said, okay, I'll do one. And he came back, and every week it was more and more, and he spread out and spread out and spread out, got a job, got his life back, reconnected with his family, you know, stayed sober, moved into an apartment.
Wow.
True story. So
really?
Just don't overdo it.
Yeah.
You know, read the book. What I'm here to do is to lay out a framework, me, we, do, be, and stir up a discussion on these habits that are proven to work, and then dial it back and pick one that's really important, make it really simple, but really have the authenticity and the integrity to do that one habit like Danny did. It naturally grows from there.
Yeah. You see, and that's amazing to know, because I don't think people are aware that that is the reality, you know. But like you said, you know, maybe if I start working out and everything, things will improve in other areas of my life as well.
It worked for me.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah, it just kind of kept everything
Kelsey's
clear.
92, and look at her. Yeah.
Rich
habits work.
Yeah. I'm actually 80. I just never go in the sun, and I work out every day.
No, they really do work.
So the website has a wealth of information. There's a core IQ test, success test, wheel of life. I mean, that's amazing. I could probably spend a few hours on this website.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's fun.
If you guys want to check it out, go to richhabits.com, and you can find out more about the book and about Randy and about the things that you do. You're also a speaker, right?
Yeah, I do a lot of speaking.
Where do you speak?
All over the world, South America, Asia, coast to coast. It's a lot of fun to
for
get out
companies
there.
And stuff.
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, for companies and every kind of organization, nonprofits, just you name it, government entities, you name it. It's nice to get out there and meet people and see them, you know, reading this about this research that I'm doing and see how it's really kind of taking root and really, really happening.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. So now you. You said you mentioned something about TED Talks and stuff before. Did you want to mention that?
Oh yeah, now? I'm doing a TED Talk next month, and uh-huh. that will be posted to the website. That's really cool. And the book has just gone crazy. We've already sold out the first printing, and we're going back to the printer.
Congratulations!
Thanks. And it just came out, you know, 3 weeks ago. So I'm pretty stoked. It's really fun.
Really nice. So people can follow you and all the things that you do. Through the website, I imagine, and the book, of course. The book is, again, Rich Habits, Rich Life, The Four Cornerstones of All Great Pursuits, and Dr. Randall Bell. And, yeah, I mean, there's quite a few endorsements here from Stephen Covey as well,
right.
that we mentioned, who wrote Seven Habits.
Yeah,
of highly successful people, if I remember the title correctly, and very cool. So, had you met him before he gave you the endorsement?
I had. He's actually a mentor of mine, and I have a lot of respect for him. He kind of laid a lot of groundwork for, you know, human behavior and habits and so forth. Some of it, you know, I didn't understand until I got a PhD. I don't know that I still do. It was kind of over my head. But a lot of it really resonated. His son, Stephen M. R. Covey, wrote Speed of Trust. Great book. Had lunch with him a few weeks ago, and he also endorsed my book. I'm very, very grateful, very humbled. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are just brilliant people that I'm really, you know, very happy to be associated with.
Right. Very cool. And I guess, you know, unless you do a good job, you're not going to get these kind of endorsements, you know, from people.
Of course not.
Well,
he's bribing them all.
Yeah. I wish I had enough money to bribe him, I would.
Yeah, I know. But that's cool. I guess when you work hard, people notice.
Well, I took 25 years to write the book.
That's amazing.
I really did.
To the mic,
yeah, I spent 25 years writing this book.
Wow.
It wasn't something I just kind of dictated and sent off to India to get transcribed. I really put a lot of thought into it. I was working on these very, very large cases. I really tried to bring the essence of it into the book, the principles and the lessons that would really have meaning.
Right. Sounds good. Now let me look at the chapter titles real quick, just so we can get an idea. Well, we have the me habits, the we habits. So you really have a framework for doing this.
Yeah, there's actually in the back of the book. One of my favorite things is this chart. It's on. Let me see my glasses. Kelsey, you're young.
Okay.
What is that? 208.
208.
208.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you see me, we do be, and you see how me splits into intellectual, philosophical, and spiritual, and we breaks into sociological, influential, and cultural. Do breaks into physical, financial, environmental, and be breaks into developmental, operational, consequential. I know that's a lot of information, but it is highly organized. But it all comes down to me, we do be.
Right. And so. Yeah, and I guess it covers everything. You know, it covers the individual. It covers how the individual deals with other people in
yeah.
society, in social settings. And then the things you have to do and the things you have to be, you know. And that's one of the things I think people make a mistake and they define themselves by what they do rather than who they are.
Right, right. Right. And I also, there's a lot of discussion about the chapters I wrote about the toxic things, you know, and toxic people.
Sure.
You know, stay away from the narcissist, stay away from the everyday sociopath, you know, the habitual liars, stay away from the borderline personality disorders. I kind of describe what these different toxic personalities, and you got to just stay away from this stuff, stay in the positive zone.
That's true, and surround yourself with positive people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Positive situations and so forth. All makes a lot of sense, you know. You guys can find out more at richhabits.com. And Dr. Randall Bell, obviously you've done a lot of work in the field and everything. And so the book took you like 25 years of, I mean, obviously you didn't sit every day and write this for 25 years, but yeah. It's the result of your work over the past 25
yeah.
years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the plane a lot, Sam, and like flying to New York, I'd say I'd write, you know, a couple pages, and but I'd go over it and over and over it. I kind of was a little obsessive, you know, honestly. Yeah, okay. But, you know, these habits apply to me as anyone else. I'm not immune from bad habits. But, you know, it took me a while to tweak it and get it just right.
Sure.
So it would really resonate and really have the themes that would really bring values instead of just, you know, filling up a lot of pages. With word processors, you can write a 400-page book in about 15 minutes. But you know, I really wanted quality content that would really, really help people that really wanted to turn around. You know, working with the homeless, you see it in their eyes. They're desperate. I mean, they're not messing around. If they don't succeed and graduate out of our program, they're back on the streets. So they're not interested in cotton candy, you know. And I'd go to these motivational seminars, and I just wanted to take over the world. But by the time I got in the parking lot in my car, I was just the same old idiot, you know. You know. So I wanted something that would really stick and really have meaning, really be authentic, just instead of a bunch of sugar-coated, you know, stuff again.
Right. Now, if you are, I mean, I'm sure you've had your share, but have you experienced adversity in your life as well? Before you applied all these habits and everything?
I have. You know, I grew up in Fullerton. My dad worked for Fender Guitar, and I had a lot of guitars, a lot of opportunities, a lot of, you know, friends who are actually famous today. But, you know, I didn't have the talent, but that's the one thing I lack. But, you know, when I was 11, I had open heart surgery, and people don't know that. And the thing is that I remember distinctly standing on the playground at Acacia Elementary School, looking at the whole sea of you know, hundreds of kids, saying, "Why am I the one kid that has to spend the summer in the hospital when I'm 11? You know, having open heart surgery?" And that really stunk. And I was you know, upset about it. But you know, when I'm grateful for that experience now, it's not a fun memory. It wasn't a fun thing to go through. And I'm completely healthy now. I've passed a FAA medical. I can fly planes. But I can tell you, I'm really grateful to those doctors. But when I see a kid in a wheelchair, you know, I get choked up in a way that someone else doesn't, because I was living that as a kid. So I've been I like to think I'm a post-traumatic thriver. You know, I've beat the challenge. You know, it beat me up, you know, physically and psychologically for a while, but I beat it, and I'm happy about that. And now I have the gift of having more empathy for people that are going through their challenges.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, I think you have to go through it yourself to be able to appreciate that. You know, like some people, some psychiatrists or psychologists, I think, never experienced like depression, for example. So they can't really, you know, so that's why you go to a psychiatrist and they're usually pretty cold, you know. They're not like a psychologist where you talk and stuff. Psychiatrist just dispenses medication. But you go there depressed and you want somebody to sympathize or empathize with you, and they don't. Because they don't know what you're going through. They only know it through their books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everyone goes through, I mean, I like to keep it positive, but let's be real here too. You know, everybody goes through the difficult D's. Everyone's going to face a disease, defeat, a death, depression, divorce. You know, the list goes on and on. The question is, how do we handle our challenges? And there's this group that will not only take on their challenges, they'll beat them and they'll thrive.
Right.
That's the segment I spent my whole PhD looking at,
right.
You know, studying the post-traumatic thriver. You know, we hear about so much post-traumatic, you know, stuff that's sad. I get it. I understand that. But let's focus on post-traumatic thriving. That's, in my mind, the most compelling human behavior.
Yeah.
That's amazing. How beneficial. I have to say, I don't read many free books that I get, but I will read this one.
Oh,
I'm excited.
I'm looking forward to your it's Amazon review.
Yeah. I'll write you a review
on
my blog.
Yeah.
Terrific.
And me, I love to read. You know, I'm currently reading about five, so this will be the sixth book I'm reading at the same time.
It's so funny you guys say that, because I've heard, I don't know how many times this month, I've never read a self-help book before.
Really?
But I read a couple pages, and what do I know? 2 days later, I finished the whole book.
Oh.
I've heard that over and over.
Very cool. Very cool. That must make you feel great.
It is. It's that I'm helping people. I get
the
helper's
high. Yeah, you're helping
people
out. Yeah. And it's not in small things. I mean, this is like life-changing things. You know?
It can be. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Randall Bell, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Sam. Thanks,
everybody,
Kelsey.
Yeah. Of course. Everybody, go out, get the book, Rich Habits, Rich Life. And you can go to the website as well and find out the wealth of information on the topic. And improve your life, you know, change your habits, make it positive, and that's your message.
Yeah, that's it. Me, we do be.
Randy, thanks again. All the best to you.
Thank you, Sam.
Of course. And Kelsey, thank you as always. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.